Siren 107.3.
Visit us at sirenonline.co.uk.
And the weather today, highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows possibly with a wind chill factor of -1 degree centigrade, day of gusty winds and sunny intervals. Does that chime with the weather in Tyneside, Ian Lennox?
Yes. It's sunny.
Yeah, well, there we are.
I haven't been able to gauge the wind or anything, but...
No, you don't want to, Ian.
The window, it's sunny.
Stay inside.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you don't want to be blown over. You're getting back to full recovery here. Ollie and Oboe need you, Ian. We need you.
Yes. I'm looking with longing eyes towards my hammock.
Well, no. Only
3 months to go.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you know, Ian Lennox, a Geordie man in his hammock. Now, there's a series for Sky Sports waiting to be done.
I'd watch it.
Extreme sports, every sense of the word. Okay, so moving on. In a few seconds, we'll be hearing from Hayley to talk about the sort of challenges of dating, etc., and where sort of dating habits is changing, adjusting. And I'd appreciate your input in terms of this, Ian, because I think it's quite important if you can actually hear what's being said, because it is one of those interviews I'll warn people that, yeah, actually, from my end, it's fine. From Hayley's end, a little bit more challenging. So sort of flagging things up that maybe the quality control on this particular one is not quite as high as I would have liked it to be.
But you're making us work for it today.
Well, I think you know, it's... Look, John, when I'm preparing the diary, he's probably sort of already dropped his pen now. His keyboard might have actually dropped in it. He might have thought, what, where, who, you know? but you know, this is just a sort of little alert to the fact that after Howard Jones, in a matter of seconds, we'll be hearing this little piece, which Ian will then comment on in terms of Valentine's and romance.
If
he can hear it, exactly.
Mind you, perhaps I can play better if I don't hear it.
Well, either way, the message will come across.
All right.
Okay, it's Valentine's Day, and clearly the whole notion of St. Lofacolia time is with us. Britain is dating, and Happn have launched their biggest UK survey to date, and they've come up with a number of interesting findings, including the areas of the country which are luckiest in love, and those not so lucky. Well, to actually look at these interesting figures and statistics, etc., we're delighted to welcome dating expert extraordinaire, that'd be the fabulous Hayley Quinn. How are you, Hayley? Exactly. I think we're having an interesting sort of challenge in terms of telephonically reaching you, but we can pretty much make it out. It's all going to be good. Share with us, Hayley, this particular, over 6 in 10 single adults are using online dating sites or dating apps. Men are more regular daters than women. Were you surprised by any of these particular findings?
you know what, I have to say, I wasn't so surprised actually by some of the findings by the dating app happening, because I think the fact that men are taking more initiative for dating, I think that's kind of an age-old way of approaching dating. However, I do think in the future we will see women making more of the first move. I think the really interesting thing, particularly about the Midlands, which I think is where you're based, if I'm correct.
Yes, that's right, exactly. Sorry, it sounded as though we're reaching you from the moon for some reason, Hayley, so I'm right. It's a strange... bizarre world. Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, returning to the East Midlands and the strange things about our place, apart from the telephony today.
Well, the strange thing about I think it's quite a positive thing, actually. One of the big stats that jumped out with me is that 77% of people in the East Midlands believe you need to make an effort with your appearance on the first day. And funny enough, though, that sounds like an absolute no-brainer. That is actually above the national average.
Which, again, we think it makes perfect sense from that point of view. Now, in terms of actually the amount of money that we spend on dates, that seems to have sort of been changing as well, really. I mean, again, as inflation goes up, dating habits sort of change, etc., and it seems that averages also work our way through. South West, £37, Wales, £39, London, of course, £119 per date.
Way over the top, London.
Well, I mean, I can go with that. Presumably we're looking at sales of that. And also in terms of the male-female split here, £92 is the average spending by a man on date compared with £47 amongst women, really. So I suppose it's... What about sort of single-gender relationships and so on? Are these kind of figures crossing over into that area as well?
Yeah, so it actually took a poll of over 2,000 people, and it was all different demographics all across the UK. So I think we saw also some really interesting findings in terms of how different age groups react and respond to dating in terms of what they prioritise. When it comes to money spent, it was actually the older generation, funnily enough, who were happier splitting the bill, versus younger generations, there still seems to be an expectation that the man should pay or should pay more.
In terms of the whole notion of how people are dating, we've seen sort of the results of that. Is it a case of planning, preparation, appearance, obviously? Are there any kind of suggestions you'd make in terms of how we can become better daters?
I think when it comes to becoming a better dater, I think the most important thing, like doing anything really, is being relaxed. Easier said than done. I would advise not achieving relaxation via too much alcohol consumption, which is actually a male dater's biggest turn-off that happened, survey and stats are revealed. Instead, I think, you know, doing simple things like arriving early, making sure that you do enough in terms of your date prep, basics like grooming, you know, ironing that shirt, turn up on time. And then also, when you're there, being able to, when you're relaxed, you're able to be more informal to people that you meet. No one wants to go on a date that feels like a job interview or that feels too high pressure or that expectations are built too high.
And in terms of places to actually go to find out further details, I mean, obviously there's a plethora of material online to find out details, but presumably you also would recommend happen to be a nice stopping off point to actually locate information and advice in addition to what we've been talking about today.
Yeah, definitely. If you can go to happen.com, which is HAPPNOE. And I think it's really also about, for everybody out there, if you are single this Valentine's Day, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being single, but it's all about taking that chance and that opportunity to meet more people.
Well, Hayley, it's been wonderful connecting with you today. I wish we'd had a better, clearer line to actually ensure our sort of ways forward. Exactly. I'll put this down in terms of, well, if only the technology was actually working part of dating, really, but still, life will continue. Take care, and we'll speak again very soon, I've no doubt.
Thank you, Alex. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's always the problems, really. It's all going perfectly well, and then suddenly the telephone line decides to actually do all manner of bizarre things on that basis. Did any of that reach you, Ian, or was it a case of,
Some of the bits of silence I heard, very clearly.
Well, I'll summarise, effectively. The East Midlands and the East Anglia, apparently, according to this Happen survey, are the luckiest people in love. Those not so lucky are...
What do you mean by lucky?
Exactly. What do you mean by lucky? In terms of people regularly going on dates and working through this, 2,000 people were surveyed from John O'Groats to Land's End and were questioned about every aspect of dating, from how long they've been single to how long they take to get ready for a date and how much they spend on a date and what their biggest turn-offs are. Personal appearance seems to be the number one in terms of people who just do not make any effort when they go on a date to work through that. And biggest spenders, well, actually, you are top, you're second in that table, Ian, because, yes, the top spenders are in London, average spent per day, £119, and then the North East second top with £88 spent per date. So,
is that by men or by women or by both?
By both, I believe, because we were working through that.
I always thought up here that the most romantic thing a bloke could say to a woman on a date was jaw round.
I like it.
It's almost like a proposal of marriage.
The people who spend the least are those in the southwest, £37 per head, Wales, £39 a head, and Yorkshire, £42 a head. So you see, northeast, big spenders, Yorkshire.
I was going to say, it's cheaper up north, so maybe
the difference in wages from the south to the north, we're probably the most generous of all.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so you see, that's something else you could
share. It's amazing how far the dole money will go.
The gyro.
Apparently, if you want to make a good impression on a date, there is a difference in terms of gender in this one. Playing on a phone is the biggest faux pas in the eyes of women. So if you're a bloke on a
date... Oh, yeah, that's the worst thing. I will smack that phone out of your hands. You've asked me out on a date, so let's have a conversation.
Yep, quite agree with that.
And for men, the biggest turn-off is for the female to get drunk.
Really?
Yep, really? But what if you get drunk together?
Straight away to marriage, that does.
Sounds as though... Could be speaking from experience, Ian. Don't worry, I'm not going to go personal. I'm not going to go personal on this particular one, but it does sound...
I could tell you some funny stories about that, but I haven't. We'll have to wait till 10 o'clock special.
Well, exactly. Backup plans are apparently always important to daters. 70% of those questioned admitted that they have left a date early. And 60% always have an excuse prepared to leave early.
Oh, wow.
Really? So 6 hours have that excuse.
I'm calculating.
There's this thing, like, in my generation, it's called ghosting, which is where, so it's basically where online dating and you just ignore them. So, like, you have one date and then you don't even say, like, oh, I'm not interested. You just ignore the other person. So if the other person is messaging you, like, wanting to meet up again, you just don't reply. Which is rude, because just tell the person you don't want to go out on a date.
Right, yeah. It didn't work.
And then they can move on.
I'm sorry, it didn't work.
Well,
that's discourteous, that is.
These are human being foibles, you see, the foibles of human beings. Wow. And Hayley Quinn tried her best to actually make those foibles public, but clearly sounded like that, really.
There's also a lot of emphasis on self-love at the minute, which is... If you're single on Valentine's Day, it doesn't matter. Well, just love yourself.
Yeah. I was thinking about that whilst I was dealing with a frozen car lock yesterday morning. It's just good stuff. Yeah,
that's romantic, Alex.
Yeah, I love my life.
Exactly.
I'm sure they can't give you a lift home because the lock's frozen.
Exactly. Your message is just to the fore. Ian, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self, and thank you for doing a little bit of extra duty after the news here. I did think they spent far too much time talking about Liverpool's results on the news, really. I mean,
who cares?
Yeah,
joking.
Who wants to beat Man United 5-0? That was something. Never mind. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, you got a 1-0 win. And bear in mind, actually, that, of course, the spiritual connection between Newcastle United and Manchester City is that City are the last team that Newcastle actually beat in a domestic cup final.
Oh,
1955. 3-1, actually.
Yes, I watched that game.
Well,
I was there.
Yeah, so it's that sort of message that's still there. And clearly, if only the result... Well, Newcastle, they shouldn't have done it. They should have realised that once they actually did that, they alert the wrath of the gods and ensure that was it. Part of the Fairs Cup, it was all over. Actually, we did want to give a middle mention to a Newcastle lad who effectively passed away and was thanked by the Newcastle players. I think the last surviving member of that 1955...
Ah, Vic Keeble.
Exactly, yes. So, yeah.
I was at a game. Vic Keeble was one of the greatest headers of the ball of his day, but he wasn't very good with his feet. And it was probably most people... maybe not heard of him, there's a chap called Stanley Matthews used to play, who was an absolute wizard of a dribble, and one of the great players of England just before the war and after the war. And he came at the bile end at the Leeds end, no, the Gallagher end, rather, and Vic Keeble tackled him. And about 60,000 people just burst out laughing.
Yeah.
But it was a nice chance. Well, I got his autograph.
I'm not surprised. Well, Vic Keeble, looking down, I'm sure, on us from on high, we salute you, sir. And as obviously one of the greatest headers of the ball, presumably without doing any sort of damage a la Jeff Astle, but who knows?
I don't think so. No, but he lived a long time, didn't
well,
he?
Well, it's a different line, but still. Yeah. Ian Lennox will now receive those last two questions. This is like a royal announcement here. Ian Lennox is now preparing to receive those last two questions from Miss Shaley McKenzie. So, Shaley, off you go.
Ian Lennox, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have, Miss McKenzie.
Oh, thank you. And can we rely on you for next Thursday?
I hope so.
Excellent.
Time the BFBC is coming to all farm areas and so on. It's the Big Farmland Bird Count, or as I like to refer to it, the Big Friendly Bird Count in many ways. We're delighted to welcome to the programme today from the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust the awesomely talented Jim Egan. How are you, Jim?
I'm very well, thank you.
So I said I'd like to see it as the Big Friendly Bird Count, I suppose the Big Farmland Bird Count. It's obviously a Roald Dahl part of me, but you know, 5 years it's been going, and it's a really important way of ensuring that really for our avian friends we actually are doing a bit of a census in terms of finding out how they're surviving, how they're thriving, and also having a look at some of the species that exist within our farmlands.
Yeah, we think it's a really great thing to do, and we're encouraging farmers to get out and actually count what's on their farm. We're not trying to do an overall census and compete with things like the breeding bird survey or anything like that, but we're encouraging farmers to build their own census. So we've got a really good core group of farmers, around 900 to 1,000, who come back every year and are voluntarily going and counting what's on their farm. And we really believe that by doing that, you're going to get a bit more interested, a bit more friendly towards them, as you've said, and you'll actually, you know, take more time out and do those little things for the birds that you see. So you might go out and see some tree sparrows and think, oh, I didn't see many of them last year, a few more this year, what's made the difference? It might make you think about doing things like putting nest boxes up, or the simple things we can do to encourage birds on farm.
One of the elements, of course, of Lincolnshire is that it's very much known as the breadbasket of England. There's lots of agricultural country and lots of rural material around, Yorkshire likewise. Is this something where, in a world in which we see agriculture very much focused towards mega industries and sort of production, etc., do we sometimes forget about the importance of birds in terms of the whole ecosphere and ecosystem?
I think sometimes that can happen, but I actually really believe that most farmers love seeing birds and farmland birds when they're out on farm. You know, there's some really iconic things that farmers love to see. So in a couple of weeks' time, people will be looking out for the first diving lapwing and that peewit call. They'll be looking for them, and that farmers mark their nests and work around them and cultivate around them. So I honestly believe that farming and wildlife are intrinsically linked together, and by doing this sort of stuff we just nudge and remind people, oh yeah, that I do need to do that bit more for that. And it's also worth remembering that farmers do an awful lot already.
In the neighbouring county of Leicestershire, of course, the GWCT, Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, has actually proven that it is possible to reverse the decline in farmland birds. That's great news. I mean, it has to be. I mean, this Allerton project that suggests that we've even got bird numbers 90% higher than they were in 1992.
Yep, and we've done it twice, actually. We put in a suite of measures back in 1992, and over 3 years we saw the songbird abundance numbers double on the farm. And we kept it like that right the way through till about 2001-2. And then we decided, oh, we want to know what actually made that happen. So we actually started to dismantle the system. Took it apart from the habitat improvement work we'd done, because you can't really take the hedges and bits out that we'd replanted. And when we'd done all that, we found we had a 30% increase. So then we put back in things like growing wild bird seed mixes, winter feeding, and having lots of insect-rich habitat. And we've actually doubled songbird numbers again. So we all know what to do, and we're not the only ones. Lots of farmers have done it on their farms, and scientifically the RSPB have done it on their farm, and organisations like the Country Trust have done it. So it can be done.
As far as I'm aware, unlike humans, our feathered friends aren't worried about Brexit and political issues with respect to that. But does migration or different migrating habits, does that impact in terms of where we're going? And again, looking towards the government's recently announced 25-year environmental plan, is it a case of getting that joined-up thinking, which we often hear so much about, but sometimes difficult to put into practice?
I think, to focus on the last comment you made there, the 25-year environmental plan is a challenge for all of us, and I think it's really good we've been given the challenge. We've been given the opportunity in many ways to prove that good, commercial, productive farming can sit alongside wildlife, and we've got to make that happen. It's really important. There's more of us now than ever. We need good quality, high quality food, but at the same time we need the wildlife there, and birds are a fantastic indicator. You know, if we've got a good bird population, you know there's lots of insects, there's lots of pollinators, there's lots of small mammals, because that's what they feed on. So birds are a great indicator, and I really, really do believe that the two things, good food production and wildlife, can work together. And I think there's lots of farmers out there that demonstrate it. So getting them to take part in the count gives us an opportunity, like today, to do really good news stories about farming and wildlife, rather than the downbeat of it can't work, it's really difficult, we've got to change. I think the environment, 25-year environment plan, demonstrates to us we've just got to tweak at the edges what we do, and we can actually make the whole lot work together.
As far as tree sparrows, corn buntings and grey partridge are concerned, is the prognosis good for them? Are they going to be improving? Because they've had a couple of challenging years over the last few periods of time.
Yeah, they have. They've had some very challenging times. There is always opportunity to do stuff, and that's why counting at this time of the year is good, because where farmers have put grown wild bird seed mixes, where they go out and supplementary feed, you know, in the same way we do in our gardens, they put big buckets of feed out, they scatter feed along tracks next to areas of where we've specifically grown seed for birds to grow. You will see good populations of tree sparrows and grey partridge and all those things that you've talked about. And it is interesting, yesterday sat at the farm down in Leicestershire, we actually took 10 minutes out at lunchtime and watched the tree sparrows feeding on our feeding stations, and there were over 150 of them out there. So if you do little things like having feeding stations for them, like putting nest boxes up, like making sure that in 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks time there's plenty of insects for those first fledging birds to come out and eat, then we can make it work. And all that can work on land next to and adjacent to productive farmland.
The big farmland bird count is in operation until the 18th of February, so 4 days after Valentine's Day, 4 days into Lent, you might well say, and we'll be around from that point of view. But if people want to find out further information, Jim, where would you point them?
It's great. They can go to our website, so that's gwct.org.uk/BFBC. If farmers are out there on social media, if they want to use the hashtag BFBC or hashtag farmers count to shout about their count and what they're doing and what they're seeing, that'll help us track what's going on. The key thing for us is lots of farmers to get out there, take part, and let us shout about the good work that they do.
Jim, I can sense the enthusiasm that's been palpable from your good self today. I'm sure all our birds' friends will be delighted from that perspective. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link from your end?
Yes, thank you. That was great.
In which case, hopefully, as you're not too far away from us in Leicestershire, we're in Lincolnshire and so on, maybe one day we can actually meet up and actually do a little visit with your good selves.
You know, if you wanted to come down to the farm, Alex, you would be more than welcome to come round and do a piece on all the work that we do, because we've got lots of work about soils, good quality water, crops and all that sort of stuff. You'd be more than welcome.
Jim, I think we'll definitely take you up on that. Many thanks indeed, Jim Egan from the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust. We salute you.
For the wings of a dove.
Madness. total madness for a wing for the wings of a dove. I've just realised, Shaley, that we promised Ian Lennox that we'd play Doctor of the Medics for him back in the first part of the programme.
Indeed we did.
It just sort of slipped by, didn't it? Slipped by. Before we knew where we were into interviews with Hayley about dating habits and then Jim Egan talking about...
Maybe we can end on it.
No, I think we're going to put it in now, actually, because in a matter of moments we'll be speaking to Apprentice winner Mark Wright, also Lord Sugar's business partner, and Charles McDowell from Aldermore Mortgages, where he's the commercial director there. We'll be talking about the huge surge in British workers looking to become self-employed. Apparently, the number of British workers planning to be their own boss has more than doubled in a year. Is that something that appeals to you, Shaley McKenzie?
It does and it doesn't, because I think it would be very hard work initially to get the business set up. But the appeal of being your own boss is definitely something that's always appealed to me.
Well, Doctor of the Medics, their current single, You Spin Me Round Like a Record.
Nice.
Particularly gothic as well.
Mm. Watch out, here I come.
Doctor of the Medics, their latest song, You Spin Me Round Like a Record, Baby, Like a Record, Round, Round. As we said last night, people now know what records are. There was a time where we thought vinyl had gone completely, but you can go into most superstores now.
Ooh, not at all. Yeah, all my friends listen to vinyl.
Well, that you get those now.
It's very retro, though.
Indeed. Unlike John Wenham's Events Diary, which we have a few moments to actually spend a bit of time about this time, because normally the show is so jam-packed full, but we've had a couple of last-minute cancellations which allowed us a little bit of flexibility today to actually mention that the Lincoln Drill Hall this coming Monday on the 19th of February, it's the Happy Monday Club. You see, I would have preferred that to have been on Tuesday, personally. It would have been more ironic. So, the Drill Hall runs regular creative play sessions for the under-fives in the cafe bar on Mondays. The sessions are organised by Rhubarb Theatre. I actually had a rhubarb pie last night.
Oh, nice.
Led each week by a different local artist, and themes are music, dance, storytelling and making. And there are just 20 places each week. Accompanying adults go free. I suppose it's one reason to actually have a child, isn't it?
Grab yourself a 5-year-old.
No, that is not a siren radio. That's not a siren radio line, and we'd like to just distance ourselves completely from that particular statement. Tickets are £3. Inquiries to the Lincoln Drill Hall, 01522 873 894. That's 01522 873 894. Also at the Lincoln Drill Hall on Thursday, 22nd of February at 7:30 PM, Casket Case. That's Casket Case. I suppose you could say Casket Case, but I'll say Casket Case. Casket Case is a show about our fear of death, as in kicking the oxygen habit. Fear of dying, fear of being dead. It's about Josie, who doesn't really do anything that could possibly even slightly increase her risk of dying, not even putting salt on her chips. Madness! Her anxieties are spiralling out of control, and her friends are faced with just two options: kill or cure. Casket Case is part story, part cabaret, part totally morbid curiosity. After all, none of us are getting out of here alive. Well, that's a fairly self-evident statement.
Very true.
I'd like to feel that the remaining 23 minutes of the programme will be fairly sort of conscious for us. The show is supported by public funding from Arts Council England and commissioned by Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. Yay, go Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. And it's Casket Case at the Lincoln Drill Hall, Thursday 22nd of February, 7:30 PM. Tickets £14, or for the under 26ers, £8.
I'm in there.
There you go.
Half price.
Inquiries as ever to 01522 873 894. So let's see, details to a couple of mini selections there from John's amazingly talented thing that he puts together every week, and will continue to do so as long as you submit, of course, material and items to go in there. And you can do that by simply sending it directly to the Siren Studio website, make it for John's attention, and he will immediately put the thing into place. I say immediately, try and give him 2 weeks notice. That's what he prefers, you know, plan the ahead, things ahead. If they've got an event that's happening tomorrow, we'll mention
happen,
it, but it
might not
reach the stage of receiving that ultimate accolade of actually being in the John Wenham's Events Diary, which obviously, you know, the last two events, Casket Case and the Happy Monday Club, have actually done that.
It's the place to be.
I hear the doorbell ring.
Agneta, Bjorn, Benny and Anna Frege are the visitors. That's ABBA. And of course, the Eurovision Song Contest will be coming around before we know where we are. Okay, in a matter of moments, we'll be speaking to two fine folk, Mark Wright, Apprentice winner and Lord Sugar's business partner, and Aldermore Mortgages Commercial Director, Charles McDowell, to take us around to that a little smidgen of Al Green with his own unique take on love and happiness on Siren Radio.
Love and happiness, yeah, something that can make you do wrong, make you do right, yeah. Love, love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, talking about how she can make it right, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Hey. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Which may, of course, be just one of the reasons why you would wish to be self-employed. Bit of happiness, bit of love. Fantastic. More than 9 million workers say that they want to be self-employed, compared to 4 million in 2017. That's near, well, actually, it's over double. To address this issue, we're delighted to welcome a tremendous dynamic duo of fine folk. First of all, Apprentice winner and Lord Sugar's business partner. That'd be the awesome Mark Wright. How are you, Mark?
Awesome, Mark Wright. I love it.
Excellent. And from Aldermore Mortgages, Commercial Director Extraordinaire, Charles McDowell. How are you, Charles?
Hi.
Excellent. Mark, let's come to you first, because really you have kind of epitomised the sheer joy of becoming, you know, self-working through that whole process. What is this suggesting to us? I mean, in an era where we're often told, oh, we don't have that entrepreneurial spirit, we're not willing to go to loan, etc., the move towards being self-employed is becoming ever more popular.
Well, yeah, I completely agree. I think the research put out by Aldermore Bank is just tremendous. It kind of really hits home what an enterprising nation the UK really is. You know, I came from The Apprentice. We've got shows like Dragon's Den. People are so encouraged at the moment to start their own business, to work for themselves, just to have that better work-life balance. And I think this research just really drove that home. I think people want to get out and do something for themselves. And I know once I became my own boss, there is no way I'd ever go back to working for anyone ever again. So all I would say to those people that are thinking about being self-employed is go and do it. It's the best thing you could possibly do. It's so exciting. There are some challenges which we'll come to, but I'm just really encouraged by what we're seeing.
Now, we have in the studio here a graduate of the University of Lincoln, Shaley McKenzie. Shaley, you're currently working for a company. We can't mention the company's name, obviously, but this, when you saw this particular news story, you thought, I'm interested.
No, yeah, it really is something that is interesting, especially for people my age. The only thing is, it's quite difficult to get this up and running, and you have to be a really driven, ambitious individual. You can't sort of like coast on it. What's the biggest challenge to being self-employed, Mark?
I think the biggest challenge to being self-employed are little things like, you know, when you first start out, you're really concerned of when some money's actually going to come in. I know when I first set up in my bedroom, I was thinking, oh my God, there is no paycheck coming in. If I don't get out and work hard and make money, I'm not going to make any money. And then I made some money. And then I went on to The Apprentice. I won The Apprentice. I then started to make quite a lot of money. And then the next challenge, getting a mortgage. You know, I think paying rent is crazy. I implore anyone to pay rent unless you really, really have to. And then I went to the bank. I tried to get a mortgage, and it was impossible because at the time you needed 3 years audited accounts in able to get a mortgage. And that was a real challenge. There are ways, which we're going to come to in terms of overcoming that, but they were the challenges, making money and doing simple things like owning your own house.
An ideal segue, really, to Charles in terms of Aldermore Mortgages, a company itself which has grown very significantly since it was first established in 2009. Charles, is this a wonderful synergistic connection of two sort of dream scenarios that Aldermore can actually help and assist? What Shaley was referring to there can be quite challenging.
I think that's absolutely spot on. I think, at this time of increased economic and political uncertainty that everyone is talking about, it's more important than ever that we create an environment that nurtures and cultivates entrepreneurs. And it's great news to hear that more and more people are looking to become self-employed in the near future, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, at Aldermore, we believe that those who have made the bold decision to become self-employed shouldn't be punished for not fitting into the traditional norm. And ultimately, it's the not fitting into the norm which is the challenge for some banks to overcome. But here at Aldermore, we make things easier for the self-employed. We offer a human being approach to lending, which considers each applicant's circumstances on an individual basis. We want to support entrepreneurs, and we want to make people who need specialist lenders like Aldermore feel special.
We were interested to find that the survey also suggested that more than half of those questioned said that Brexit negotiations will have little impact on their business. In a sense,
I was so surprised by that. Yeah. I couldn't believe that when I read it. And I'll tell you what was really interesting is, do you know what? I don't care about it either. What happens in the Brexit? I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own businesses here in the UK. And I don't care what happens over there. I'm quite fed up of hearing the word Brexit. I want to, I want to talk more about how we're going to move our country forward and our businesses forward and be supported in that way. And that's why I think being self-employed people like myself don't really care.
Shaley, you're nodding in agreement there quite strongly.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, I would have thought that Brexit would impact your business. But again, if you do have that natural drive, you will obviously push the business forward in innovative ways to ensure that Brexit doesn't affect your business as a whole.
You've nailed it. And I think what most entrepreneurial people think is, I can't control what's happening over there in Brussels, so why worry about it? Let's get my head down, focus on my business and focus on being self-employed. Worrying about what some politicians are doing out there really isn't going to help you you run a more successful or least successful business. It doesn't matter.
And presumably, Charles, you'd echo the glass half full optimistic approach as opposed to we're all doomed.
Exactly. So I get to deal with a lot of entrepreneurs and the self-employed. These are Britain's go-getters. They are intelligent, driven, and extremely passionate. They understand their businesses and markets inside out. And, regardless of what's going on in the overall global economic and political agenda, the fact is we need to have butchers and bakers and candlestick makers. We need to continue to make things, and we need to continue to sell things. And I think people are just facing the challenge head on.
I've made my most amounts of money when the times are tough, when the chips are down, in uncertain times, because that's when you can pounce, take opportunity by the horns and be successful.
And is it a case of it's all down to the needs that a lot of traditional banks actually have for certainty, being able to predict the future as far as possible, that somehow personal finances, like getting a mortgage, can be really challenging for the self-employed?
Yes, I think that's absolutely spot on. The traditional banks use a computer system and computer algorithms, and very much a computer says yes or no approach, And if you don't fit the cookie cutter approach to sort of financial assessment, then big banks find it more difficult to lend to you. But ultimately, I guess, to repeat what I said earlier, at Aldermore, we've got a human approach to lending. Every lending decision has a human being at the end of it that looks at the individual circumstances and makes a choice based on the facts.
Yeah, the problem there is when anyone goes for a mortgage, they do what I did. They just go to the bank that they have their current account with, which is the biggest mistake you could make, because the big banks don't want to take risks, right? They've got enough money. They deal with the high net worth individuals and businesses anyway. You want to start with brokers and banks like Aldermore that have what's called manual underwriting, where they look at you on an individual basis, because if that's not going to happen, the computer's always going to say no.
Which is a dreadful thing from a fantastic comedy series back in the day, but when computer says no, you think, no!
Nice pop reference.
Aldermore.co.uk presumably is the place to go to online to find out more details. I see you can also use the Twitter handle at Aldermore News. Gentlemen, it's been a privilege connecting with both of you this morning. Have you both had a reasonably satisfying link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
Oh, it's been amazing.
It's been brilliant, brilliant to talk to you both.
Well, the awesome Mike Markwright and the commercial director extraordinaire Charles McDowell, we salute you. And hopefully, gentlemen, we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Take care now.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
I got you. That's all I want. So
Ends from Australia. I got you a precursor, I believe, to Men at Work. Okay, that's it. It's all over, Shaley. We have pretty much done our piece, and we will be heading into the sunset with just the memories of Gabriella Peralta's birthday special, Richard Fitzwilliam's views on Black Panther and Lady Bird, Ian Lennox's thoughts about dating, and the extraordinary, amazing Hayley phone call that accompanied that, National Bird Spotting with Jim Egan from the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, and, of course, Mark Wright and Charles McDowell talking about self-employed mortgages and a whole heap of other things.
It's been a really interesting midweek presenting today.
There we go. More good stuff, of course, coming with breakfast time tomorrow and a whole heap of other things as well. This has been Siren Radio, still is Siren Radio. We have got Out of My Head with Charlie XCX featuring Tove Lo and Alma.
Oh, I love it.
Takes us out of the whole sequence.
She's Swedish, isn't she?
Highly likely, yes. And we'll be back next week, probably same sort of time. There we are, 8 through 10 a.m. on Thursday mornings. Or check out the Midweek Drive on Wednesday evenings between 5 and 7. You might find that even more extraordinary, after a fashion. Shaley, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Me up like this, secretly I'm into it.